This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Jim Phillips of Center Consulting. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. Happy to be on.
Thank you for coming. I attended one of Jim's events recently, the annual 2014 review, Hot Issues in Federal Contracting, and extraordinarily informative event. Number one, how long has this been going on, Jim?
So this is the 11th year we've done this. It's an annual. We do it about 5-6 times a year in the D.C. area. Then we do it around the country, a few places. But this is our 11th year, just doing a summary of what happened in the last year and what we see coming down the pike.
Cool. So tell people a little bit about you and Center and what you guys do.
Well, we have a lot of fun, first of all. The federal market, as you know, is a challenging place. We've been assisting companies in the federal market for the last 11 years. I'm the executive vice president, and we do a lot of training. We have an entity called the Federal Contracting Institute. They offer this training, the annual review. Plus, we do a lot of consulting, helping people position themselves in the market, do a lot of work with GSA, VA, and then we do a lot of compliance support as well. So we're on the front end and the back end. And busy times these days.
Yeah, and again, it's intriguing. You do your annual predictions and you match them against the previous years. I'd like to start with those predictions. You're in, out. Your first prediction, oddly enough, is kind of counterintuitive. Less funding disruption. So explain that for me.
Well, you know, we've gone through the sequester wars, and it looks like Congress finally has learn that they're counterproductive to keep the government on a really short budget string. So we've got funding into 2015, which is the longest runway we've had in quite a while.
Yep.
So I think that takes away, you know, at least the uncertainty that goes with it. And that's probably the best piece of good news we have to offer in these predictions.
Okay, and it is, there's a couple of highlights here, but you're right, there's a lot of weird stuff coming down. But is sequestration truly gone?
Well, it's certainly going to be gone until after the elections, so we'll see what happens. You know, both sides basically said, based on where the deck chairs are lined up with the Congress being split between Democrats and Republicans, they don't want to continue this battle. After the elections, who knows what's going to happen?
New ball game. Yes, sir. The next prediction is one that I certainly hope comes to fruition. It's the successor to Joe Jordan, and you are predicting that Leslie Field will finally get a non-acting role and actually be an appointee. Now, for me, that means finally adult supervision at OFPP that we haven't had since Dan Gordon.
Yeah, and I want to stress, look, this is an aspirational prediction. I don't have any superior knowledge about this.
Right.
But I agree with you that it would be nice to have some stability there, probably less political flavor to that position. And Leslie's been acting a number of times, and she's been in that role as a deputy and the acting. And I think it would provide just excellent stability, and it would be great if she were able to become, you know, the permanent in that OFPP position.
Right, and the, you know, my whole problem with appointees, and we saw this with recent Senate hearings for ambassadors, is there doesn't have to be any demonstrable expertise in the area where you're going. Somebody, you know, who's going to be ambassador, who's never been to a country, doesn't speak the language, you know, couldn't tell you what kind of government they have, you know, on and on. This is, I don't hate appointees. I hate the concept of appointees.
Well, you know, we just this market has been just really brutalized by what I call churn, just, you know, policy churn, regulation churn, and we need to get back to doing business for a while and let people get their feet under them.
Well, on both sides. I mean, you know, when you say something like that, people assume it's contractor side. No, no. The line managers inside government are suffering every time there is a significant change at the top or near the top of the organization.
Yeah, no, I have tremendous empathy for government program managers today. I think you're exactly right.
Okay. Prediction three, in audits and disputes, out business as usual. This doesn't bode well.
Well, you know, it's a product of tight money, and I guess I should give a disclaimer. I am an attorney also, so I do practice law, and, you know, we've gone through a long period with a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of protests, but claims and disputes have not been prominent in the federal marketplace, unlike 20, 30 years ago, but I'm seeing a lot more uptick in both audits with the government pounding on contractors to justify both their numbers and their past actions.
Mm.
And now the government saying, hey, you owe us some money back, or, you know, we're not going to pay you more for that work. And I'm seeing it, you know, really across the board, civilian and DOD.
Now, do you have a guesstimate on the percentage of those decisions that are actually accurate?
You mean in terms of the disputes?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because I've seen some, but when they're brought to my attention, obviously the government has overreached and still come to the wrong conclusion.
Well, I mean, look, when you make a decision based on a legal decision or a, you know, a contract interpretation decision based on funding considerations, that's always problematic. Because are you really looking at the facts of the particular matter, or are you making a decision based on your money posture? So I think, you know, that's happening a lot, that a lot of decisions are being driven by economics, not the realities of what's happening on the contract, what's in the best interest of that program, but hey, we just don't want to fund that.
Right.
So is that bad decision making? Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, and frankly, there's extraordinary costs on both sides anytime there's not a dispute situation.
So, agreed.
And when you're going after, you know, not significant amounts of money, you have to, I think you should take that in consideration as well.
You know, the one thing the government would do well to remember is that when you have best value contracting, contractors understand that their customer service and their customer relationship is being evaluated, and they're going to be less likely to file protest and be adversarial. But if you're going to tell the contractors, we don't care about your business relationships and your customer service, we only care about your price, then you're going to get in this environment where, hey, price matters to everyone, and now we're going to fight over consequences when something costs me more money.
Yeah, and there's no winner in that.
No, no. Well, the lawyers are going to win.
Well, yeah, but, you know, well, I'm not going to pick on lawyers today because you are one.
That's right. Well, look, I'm not in favor of the disputes process. It's a bad deal for the government and for lawyers. It goes on forever.
Right. All right. Prediction number four, organic growth over FedBizOps bidding.
Yeah, I just we think that, first of all, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how many new programs actually come out. But when we talk to clients and how they're growing their business, they're less looking at new opportunities, and they're more looking at, hey, I've got a business relationship, I've got an IDIQ contract, I'm going to grow the business through that vehicle that I have by working one-on-one with the customer. And as you know, that's always a great business development strategy, but in this environment, it may be the only one.
Yeah, yeah. The next prediction was news-driven enhanced background checks.
Yeah, that is news-driven. Yeah. Obviously, the Snowden event and the Washington Navy Yard event, you know, cast some less flattering light on the background investigations process. There's been a DOJ action now involving the contractor that was doing some of those investigations. So it's going to be interesting to see whether this, how this plays out. You know, the government used to do the background investigations back in the mid-early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Then they outsourced the whole process.
Right.
And now, of course, we're seeing that, you know, when it's outsourced, cost matters. Time matters, getting it done timely, plus the explosion in the number of requests for background checks.
Right.
So and I think they're going to have to revisit how they do the system.
Well, that, and you may remember, yeah, I'm sure you do remember, a year or two back, that there was controversy on the other side. Takes too long to get a background check. Push
right.
it faster.
Well, that's right.
So, you know, the pendulum, the pendulum came back and smacked somebody in the head.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I say a lot is we run into a lot of unintended consequences.
Yep.
In federal contracting, and when something becomes a priority, beware of the unintended consequence of that priority.
Right. And you know, when it's a legislative issue, sometimes I am not convinced it's an unintended consequence, but we don't need to go there just yet.
Okay.
Prediction number, however many it is, FSSI, one of my least favorite things.
Well, I mean, FSI is Federal Strategic Sourcing Initiative. It's definitely up and running. GSA is actively pushing a number of FSSI programs. They're doing janitation, sanitary supplies, maintenance, repair, and operation supplies.
Mm.
Office supplies is underway. They've made it clear they're going to go to furniture next. We hear talk of maybe an initiative involving soup, involving laptop computers through FSSI. So this is a program that is just taking off, and for contractors that are in the market that are targeted for FSSI, they need to pay attention and get a strategy to deal with it.
Yeah, your next one is OMB review of Macs.
Well, right, so that's the dynamic in the market. Do we have too many contract vehicles? It goes back to that organic growth prediction as well.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like all the agencies want to, if they had their druthers, develop their own multiple award contract vehicles. Of course, we see the controversies associated with that, with the protests involving Eagle 2, NetSense. You can go on and on.
Right.
So OMB, I think, is finally indicating that they are going to weigh in and say, hey, you know, does this make sense for every agency to duplicate the Mac that's available at another agency? And of course, GSA is definitely weighing into that discussion because they would like the work to migrate to government-wide contracts that they manage.
Well, of course they would, but I don't necessarily think those are the best managed vehicles out there.
And that's a fair debate. And I mean, the question is the agency better off, you know, being in charge of picking the vendors that are going to service them versus having a third party who may or may not have much vested interest in the outcome make that selection?
Yeah.
So that's a fair comment.
Okay. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio. I'll be back with Jim after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest is Jim Phillips, the Executive VP of Center Consulting. You can find Center at Center, C-E-N-T-R-E, centerconsult.com. The event that we're talking about, the annual review 2014, will be traveling around the country in the spring of 2014. So go to their website for information on that. It's a very worthwhile event. Let's talk about small businesses in our little market here. You know, what are the top agencies? Take it from there and go where you want.
Well, we ran the numbers part of our review, and if you look at the spend by agencies, you basically see that the spend on the civilian side for small businesses has steadily increased, at least between 2012 to 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, on the DOD side, it went down. That probably reflects the sequester to a large extent. But, I mean,
didn't go down as percentage, just went down as number.
Yes, went down as numbers, for sure.
Yeah.
The VA is clearly leading the pack on the civilian side. Obviously, the VA has a legislative requirement to give a preference to service-disabled and veteran-owned small businesses. and they have a super goal in that arena. So it's not surprising to see that they're leading the pack on the civilian side. Some other agencies have, you know, significantly increased their spend on small business, where HHS and Treasury as well.
Okay. So, and you run down a whole slew of them in your presentations. How about for defense? Army's still on top.
Yeah, Army's still on top with actually quite a fairly large lead over the other agencies. Navy followed by DLA, Air Force, and then, of course, the Office of the Secretary of Defense lagging in behind there.
Right.
You know, again, this probably reflects the fact that they have some contract vehicles that they're emphasizing that are specifically targeting small businesses.
Right. I was at an event at Fort Meade recently where the small business officer for the command at Fort Meade, not for any of the 116 plus agencies resident there. And they were running down, but I mean, there were 250 plus contractors there. It was pretty robust event. I don't think any of them are going to get serious work out of it, but it's nice to see them trying to share information and show them where the bodies are buried.
Right.
So, and I don't mean that in a mean way when I say I don't think any of them are going to be business. Most of these companies are extreme novices in the market, and no novice really wins. At least not quickly.
Well, not quickly. I mean, as we know, it takes a significant amount of time and resource investment to get your feet under you and actually win direct business.
Right. So, well, let's talk about that, because you rank the top 8As and the top SDVOSBs in the presentation. So we can run down a few of these if you want, but more importantly, what do you think it takes to be a winner as a set-aside?
Well, I mean, first of all, when we look at some of these numbers, people will look and say, well, here's a company that has $240 million in sales, ActionNet Inc., the largest 8A.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a dichotomy that's taking place here. Obviously, if you're a product reseller, you can have huge sales and still be small by staying under the 500-employee headcount.
Right.
If you're in that arena, obviously you have to have strong relationships with very vibrant manufacturers.
Right.
Who are in high demand in the federal market.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be on all the top contract vehicles. So if you're in IT, you need to be on SOUP. You need to be on the NIH vehicles,
mm-hmm.
And either on GSA Vets or GSA Stars, one of those vehicles,
mm-hmm.
that allows you to be successful.
Multiple ways to sell.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, service vendors have a harder way to go because obviously they have to stay small under revenue goals, and that's the tough market. I mean, you'll see people that will literally win one contract. And then they
graduate. Yeah.
They've graduated.
Yeah, and if they lose a contract, they go back to
being. They go back
yeah.
out.
Exactly. So it's a nasty pendulum.
Very nasty. And predictable.
But you said the resellers needed relationships with the manufacturers. What about relationships with the distributor partners? We have the traditionals with Ingram Micro, Avnet, Synnex, et cetera, Aero. Do those help as well?
Well, sure. I mean, it's all about being able to have access to, you know, first of all, favorable product lines, but also favorable price terms. So if you're dealing with a large distributor who's acting as a market reseller, and you're going to be reselling through your own vehicle or as a designee of those distributors, that can help you immensely.
Okay. So, and we, you know, we have the newer type master VARs / distributors like Carahsoft, Immix, and DLT as well. So
correct.
This market does evolve, boys and girls. So it's important to pay attention. You cover a tremendous amount of legislation here, but before we get deeply into that, let's talk about the new small business potentially pending legislation that's going to, if passed, bump the requirements for set aside from 23% to 25%. Give me your 25,000-foot overview here.
Well, I mean, this is we see legislation like this every year, and I mean, I'm not trying to deadpan it, but you know, you look at the titles, and they're almost the legislation is written for a press release.
Yeah, it's pandering.
It's the Greater Opportunities for Small Business Act. You know, and as you indicate, the purpose is to raise the goals from the government-wide goal from 23% to 25%. I mean, I guess it would be meaningful if the government was meeting the 23% goal, because then we would be raising the bar. But when they're not even meeting the 23% goal, I don't really see where this accomplishes a whole lot for us.
I got to agree completely here. It's from my perspective, and I've said this in a number of venues over the past couple of years, unless and until there are teeth in the current legislation, you know, we could raise it to 100% and it's still not going to happen.
Right.
So
that's why it's called a goal. It's a goal. There's no, nothing negative happens if people don't meet the goal.
That's the issue. Nothing negative happens.
Right.
You know, that's not a good situation.
It's certainly not going to change the dynamic in the market.
No. I want to take a break here, and we'll take a dive into other legislation that you bring up. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest is Jim Phillips. He's the executive VP at Center Consulting. Center Consulting does a variety of things around helping companies in various contractual issues. It's a law firm. It's an education firm. Do a lot of training through the Federal Contracting Institute. I have that right, don't I? FCI?
Yep, you do.
Okay, good. So I want to dive in a little bit to the legislation that you guys covered in the briefing. Let's start off with the NDAA, the scope, and the numbers, please.
Well, so when we do this annual review, we always spend a fair amount of time looking at the NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act, because it's the one legislation that always gets passed, and the Congress then puts a lot of ornaments on it in the nature of acquisition reform. So that's where you're going to find the new rules that will become new FAR regulations and FAR clauses 2 to 3 years from now. And it's kind of amusing. I mean, we can see the drag. We've been doing this program for 11 years. And, I mean, it's almost 2 to 3 years now before you see the legislation and then the regs. So the stuff we're talking about are new legal requirements, but they have not been adopted by the FAR Council. So they are not effective or not applicable to contracts until the FAR gets updated.
Right.
Yeah. So some of the things we talk about, obviously, we always like to focus on just what is the budget for defense, the overall defense budget for 14 was pegged at $607 billion, of which the procurement budget is just under $100 million, $98 billion. I'm sorry, $98 billion and change, plus an additional $6 billion for contingency operations. So that's the total spend that's available to go to contractors for 2014. Still a pretty big program, but I mean, we're seeing continuing indications that you know, the defense budget is going to be targeted for cuts. And we're certainly looking at the Army being reduced in size and scope, and that's going to affect the procurement spend when that gets run through.
Okay.
Some provisions that we talked about. Back in 2012, Congress put a cap on expenditures on service contracts. And, of course, our market here is heavily dependent on companies provided services. So the amount of spend that the DOD could spend on service contracts was capped at 2010 levels, as was the labor rates and the overhead rates. They've now agreed to basically extend the spending levels to 2014, but they are now allowing the rates, both the direct labor rates and the indirect rates to go up. I mean, you can't hold the line at 2010 indefinitely.
Right.
So that's one change that's coming down. So for those listeners who have been told they can't bump their rates up, this legislation will now give you some relief on that front.
Okay.
We see contractor compensation continuing to be an issue. There actually were two pieces of legislation. The NDAA capped the compensation cost at $625,000. And then there was a later provision, the Omnibus Act, which actually cut it to, I think it was $475,000. So what that means is that, yes, you can pay your executives whatever level you deem appropriate, but above the cap, those are going to be deemed unallowable costs that you cannot allocate either directly or through your indirect rates to your federal contracts.
Right. So we're not funding, you know, the $10 million a year gig.
Nothing close to it.
Right.
In fact, so the new cap is basically pegged that the highest paid representative in the contractor can't be paid more than the President of the United States.
Okay.
So they can be paid. They just won't be reimbursed by the government.
Right.
Right.
So
some other provisions that we... that we've been tracking. Interestingly, so there's a section 1601 that is now providing for audits by DOD's Inspector General of contracting practices within the Department of Defense. So as we mentioned in our predictions, we see increased audits of contractors being a solid trend. This legislation would now provide that the IG is also being directed on the DOD side to police their own government contracting practices. So everyone's going to be under the microscope together, Mark.
Doesn't go away, does it?
No, doesn't go away.
Okay.
Another section of interest to people might be Section 1613. This deals with the small business subcontracting. As we've already indicated, Congress, Chairman Graves of the House Small Business Committee is trying to raise the goal to 25%. That's a proposed piece of legislation.
Mm-hmm.
The NDAA that was passed now requires agencies to adopt remediation plans that they will adopt in their small business contracting reports. And they will then address what they're going to do more better in reaching those small business contracting goals.
But they remain goals.
But they remain goals. Yeah. And again, it's a plan. And as you point out, there's no teeth in it if you don't do it.
Right.
But it certainly, I will say this. Look, when agencies feel they're under the microscope about making something happen, They're inclined to try to make the issue go away.
Yeah.
So I think it will create more impotence to set aside more of these contracts for small business.
Well, I think one of the things that they need to do, and you address this in Section 1614, is the credit for certain small business subcontractors. So.
And that is something they're looking at, actually.
But you know, are they gonna look at it seriously? Because this could be very legitimate. It would encourage primes to actually use subs more frequently now, something that they are recently not doing because the contracts are shrinking. They're keeping more work in house.
Yeah. Well, there is so in the NDAA. I mean, you raise a great point, and it's Section 1614 of the Act. It's actually got two interesting elements. It requires prime contractors to review and monitor the subcontracting plans of their subcontractors.
Okay.
So that means if you're a first-tier, second-tier subcontractor and you're a large business, now you're going to get monitored for your small business subcontracting.
Okay.
Then the interesting second thing it does, it permits prime contractors to apply the awards by their second and third-tier subs to meeting their subcontracting goals.
But that, you know, I think that's actually pretty sane.
Yeah, well, it is.
It's not, the issue becomes the accounting side of it. So there's an added cost there to, you know, provide the paper trail, but I think it's a very legitimate add-on.
Well, I agree with you, and I cannot tell you the number of times where we've helped clients with very large projects where they have a significant small business subcontracting goal, and where we just literally could not find first-tier subcontractors that would meet the goal. If you're allowed to take credit for the second and third tier, that's a sane requirement.
Yeah, so if your sub is not a small business, but they're using X number of small businesses, why shouldn't that count?
Right.
So, very cool. So. What, anything else on NDAA?
No, that's really the highlights that we've pegged in our, you know, there's a lot of other provisions we talk about, but they're usually focused on smaller markets, so I won't go into them here.
Okay. Well, we're going to take our break early then. When we come back, I want to take a deeper dive into what you discussed regarding GSA and various new things coming through there. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio. My guest is Jim Phillips. You can find Jim at centerconsult.com. Center is C-E-N-T-R-E. Centerconsult.com. Back after these messages. Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest is Jim Phillips, Executive Vice President of Center Consulting. Again, I attended one of Jim's events recently, the annual review, Hot Issues in Federal Contracting. Lots of good information. Wonderful workbook, which I'm probably going to be using for a while now. Let's take a dive into the GSA schedules, the updates here, what's going on here. So give me your broad brush, then we'll take a dive into a couple areas.
Well, we spent a fair amount of time discussing GSA because obviously that's a significant, if not the primary gateway into the federal market for most vendors. And it's interesting, Mark, when you look at the numbers at a very high level, you're really struck by the fact that they are consistently down, both at the macro level and on individual schedules. GSA had, pretty much tracked in at $38 billion, $39 billion. They were down almost 8% under $35 billion. And the big heavy lifting schedules like IT-70 and MOBIS, they all showed very appreciable decreases in sales in the last fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only a few specialty schedules like the FAB schedule and the facilities maintenance schedule that showed any kind of robust gains at all. So our takeaway is that we wonder if the schedules program may not be in decline. When you look at GSA's long-term budget or their long-term business plan, very little attention given to the schedules there.
Well, in the five-year plan that you and I have both read, and hopefully a lot of other people have read, there's no mention
right.
of the schedules.
Right.
And to me, that's a major telltale source. So the besides FSSI, which we'll get to in a minute, is there a significant alteration going on here? I mean, I've seen a number of schedules just be closed to new vendors.
Well, that's right. So part of what's going to happen with initiatives like FSSI is that GSA is going to set up a government-wide BPA or contract vehicle, and then they're going to close the schedule behind it to new offerors. And, my sense, and just from talking to folks at GSA, is that the schedules program has become too unwieldy for them. There's too many vendors on it, and they want to reduce the scope, the size of the vendors they're dealing with. So going with FSSI allows them to cull the herd significantly.
Well, they could have culled the herd a number of years ago if they employed the $25,000 by the end of year two criteria for maintaining a schedule.
Well, that's right. And obviously they are now doing that belatedly. That's what makes some of this very, very hard for people in industry to appreciate, because as few as 2 years ago, GSA was still robustly asking people to get on schedule, promoting the schedules.
Well,
and now
SBA tells people to every day.
Yeah, and now, I mean, to be candid with it, they're almost making it as hard as possible to get on schedule.
Well,
it takes a year to get on a contract, high rejection rates, very heavy maintenance costs in terms of submitting mods and managing the contract.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into mods too. So let's take a dive into one of my favorite subjects to discuss, not that I'm a fan, is the strategic sourcing, or as I like to say, StratSour. It's my new acronym.
Well, so GSA does not own FSSI, but they've certainly grabbed the steering wheel. So FSSI is an OMB-wide initiative to basically require the agencies to review their internal portfolios and then to work together to develop government-wide vehicles. Because OMB realized it's going to take the agencies time to do the analysis and to communicate with each other on what should be strategically sourced from their view, they've gone ahead and given GSA the green light to set up 10 of these contract vehicles in the next 2 years. So that's why we're seeing a strong GSA position. And as you talked about in that business plan, the five-year business plan, this is where GSA sees their growth coming from, taking the lead and being the lead agency on these new initiatives.
Okay. So we had the, but, you know, the fallout here is tremendous. When they did the first strategic sourcing, it was for Schedule 75, and at that time there were somewhere between 530 and 550 contractors on that particular vehicle. Only, 20 or so won the initial.
It was under 20. I think it was 17 or something.
Yeah. It was basically a BPA.
Right.
Only 17 won, and the rest were really told to go out. Now, GSA blew the big small business horn because 14 of those companies were small. But if you run the numbers since that award, the winners are the same two or three companies that were pulling 60% of the dollars at the beginning. And I'm not doing this to embarrass the companies. You know, they were going to do this anyway. But Staples and Office Depot are the big winners.
Well, that's right. One of the CLINs on the contract is set up for catalog storefront operations. So that's going to large business automatically.
Right.
So,
but you know,
and that feature is going to be in the new FSSI for office supplies as well.
Sure, and I know it needs to be.
Right.
But the vast majority of the orders are not going to small businesses.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the numbers on OS2. You know. But you're right. Look, you're shrinking the vendor base dramatically. As you said, there were over 500 vendors on Schedule 75. If you go down to 17, 15 of which are small businesses, you still eliminated 500 small business vendors.
Exactly. And I know a lot of those people. And there's been several businesses that have died as a result, hundreds if not thousands of people unemployed as a result. Trade-off is extraordinary. So, you know, you can argue the merits of FSSI. It is a reality. Your predictions, everybody's predictions say it's here at least for a while, like my other least favorite thing, reverse auctions, but we're not going to get into that today. Let's spend a couple of minutes, if you will, going back to something that you referenced earlier. Modification madness, I believe is how you referred to this. What's going on here?
Well, you know, GSA schedules are they're an evergreen contract. You have the opportunity either as a services provider or a product provider to, you know, repeatedly update your offerings. You either add labor categories, you add products, you delete labor categories, you delete products. And that's all done through modifications. If you want to have your most current stuff on contract, you want to be as competitive as possible, you need to be doing these transactions. Well, unfortunately, it's taking a significant amount of time to do those transactions. To the point where it's frustrating business, in my opinion. I think a lot of vendors, particularly IT vendors, when they look at the Schedule 70 program versus a contract vehicle like NASA SUP, where you can literally do mods in 2 hours versus Schedule 70, where you're looking at weeks, you know, at a certain point, they really question, why do I need to be here?
Yeah, but, you know, to compare apples to apples or apples to oranges in this case, that's one of the reasons why Joanne Wojtek has kept the number of vendors on soup at a radically much smaller number. IT70 represents, what, 5,500 plus companies?
Right.
Soup represents less than 40.
Right.
Now, I have some, it's not inside information, it's called inside gossip, but that number may double to 75 to 80 vendors, but I doubt seriously if it would go any higher than that for soup.
Right.
Because that customer service side of their equation is extraordinary.
Right.
So.
But I mean, GSA would say that you're making my point, which is why I need to call a herd on schedules.
Yeah, but
so their attempt to do FSSI is really to kind of emulate that model.
It would have been nice had they discussed this with industry beforehand.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, rather than blind. So, you know, it costs companies a lot of money and a lot of time to go after a GSA schedule, and if they're told to do so by every contracting officer out there, and then they're stymied at GSA. You know, don't be surprised, GSA, if a number of Congress people call and say, "What the heck's going on?" Talk to me a little bit about the pricing negotiation initiatives here, because that was a fairly significant part of your presentation.
Well, so GSA on the schedules program has had a consistent pricing metric, which is give me a disclosure of your commercial sales practices, including who received your most favored customer price for the items you want to put on schedule. And then we'll negotiate with you on what the GSA price will be. And GSA, of course, will then, they'll target your most favored customer price
sure.
as being the basis for the GSA price. Why wouldn't they? And then it becomes a negotiation of what is fair and reasonable. Strangely or interestingly now, GSA has updated their pricing instructions on all the schedules to add additional language that says that even if you offer MFC pricing, but your MFC prices are not highly competitive with what other vendors offer for what they deem to be similar products or services, then your offer will not be considered and will not be awarded.
Now, tell me where they're getting these other vendor prices.
Well, that's part of the frustration and controversy. They're using electronic tools like XSB is one of them that they use,
mm-hmm.
and they run your catalog through it, and they run your part numbers, and then it gives them a cross-reference to other similar products or the same product offered in commercial databases like on Amazon
mm-hmm.
or on NASA Soup, other federal databases. But is it the same item? Are they comparing your price list to a obsolete price list? Might those products in XSB be made in China versus TAA compliant as they
right.
must be on schedule?
Or even with legitimate parts.
Right. So it really is a commoditization, particularly when it's applied on the product side. And it's breaking the traditional pricing mechanics of the contract.
Yeah.
You know, I want to compete based on the fact that I have some key differentiators over my competitors, and my product's worth more. Well, GSA is basically trying to say, we don't think so. We're going to call you all the same.
There you go. Unfortunately, we are out of time. Jim, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You can find Jim at Center, C-E-N-T-R-E, consult, centerconsult.com. You know, check out the calendar for the events. If all of the events there are as good as this one, I'd strongly suggest you check it out. This is not my day job. If you need help with your marketing to the government, or if you'd like to learn how to leverage LinkedIn to sell to the government, give me a call. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off-Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.